Fortnight in Film is a podcast where every week you get the chance to listen in on a group of film lovers chatting about the great, or not so great, movies that we've been watching over the past fortnight. Hello and welcome to episode 28 of A Fortnight in Film. I'm your host, Jason.
And I'm your co-host, George.
Thanks for tuning in. Last episode, we got along swimmingly.
A rare occasion.
A rare occasion. We agreed with each other on pretty much every film. I don't think that'll be the case today. But that's okay. Disagreement is interesting too.
It's healthy. It's healthy, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. You know, variety is the spice of life.
Exactly, yeah.
Heads up. The films we're about to discuss may contain spoilers. For a list of the movies we cover this week, check out the description. So, let's begin with my pick, which is All the President's Men from 1976, directed by Alan J. Pakula. Pakula. I wasn't actually familiar with that name.
I think he did Clute. Parallax View. He's done a sort of trilogy of political thrillers, I suppose, which this is a part of.
So it stars Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman. They play Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, respectively, who are obviously two journalists for the Washington Post back in the day. I was thinking about not giving a plot synopsis for this. I can, but I thought, like, I feel like it's easier to say to people, go and look up the Watergate scandal.
Yeah, I mean, we won't give a plot synopsis because it is the Watergate scandal.
And I feel like, and I'll get into this when I, you know, when I talk about the film, I didn't really like... I watched a film and then I was looking at Watergate and I still don't really get what happened. I'm going to break precedent here and I'm just not going to give a plot synopsis. I'm just going to say to people, go and look up Watergate and that will explain the film. So even if this was my pick, I did not like it.
This is one of the ones that I almost can't get my head around. Like, you know Christian last week for Starship Troopers. This is me with All the President's Men, because I can't quite get my head around this. But you go ahead.
Well, the thing, I expected to like it. That's why I picked it, because I thought,
why I was confused. I opened Letterboxd and I saw the one star. I legit stared at it for like 20 seconds. I was like, what?
So I expected to like it. It's been on my watch list. I am a journalist. I have a degree in journalism. I work as a journalist. So I thought I would love this film, but no, it just didn't do it for me. So I didn't really get what was going on. I got the general gist of it, in that these people broke into the Democratic National Committee building. Those people were found to have ties to Richard Nixon and his committee to re-elect the president. I got that. I don't really get, like, what Watergate was still. I think the film operated on, and I feel like a lot of films do this, like biographical films, they operate on this premise that everybody knows what it is they're being shown. Thus, they don't need to explain a lot. So, like, I'd say Hotel Rwanda did this. I thought that was a fantastic film, but as I discussed with Andrew, I said, I just needed like a bit more backstory. I think a film that came out last year did this, which was called Quo Vadis Ada. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. That's a Bosnian film, and it was about the Srebrenica massacre. And again, I gave it 4.5 stars. I thought it was a fantastic film, but I'm like, I just needed that bit more context and backstory. Like, again, I was familiar. I was sort of familiar with what happened in Rwanda. I was sort of familiar with Srebrenica because I'd read stuff about it. You know, I'm sort of familiar with Watergate as most people today, but I don't really know about it. And so I felt like the film, like, I just wanted a bit more backstory to get it. Like, we never got how, and I was reading, because I was trying to understand what Watergate was after I saw this film, and I read that it's still it's still not conclusively proven, so I can sort of forgive a film for not entering into our territory. But like, we never understood why these people broke into the Watergate complex to begin with. Okay, yes, we know that they were connected to Nixon, but it was like, okay, and?
Well, I guess my response would be that the Watergate scandal, it's such a big like topic, it's such a big thing that a director is never going to be able to fully make a film, because it was over, what, 2 years or something, I think, 1972 to 74. You're not going to get a film which fully goes into detail, because then you just watch a documentary, I guess, like fully explaining the Watergate scandal. I think what it covered very well, it covered the sort of genesis of the reporting on it from the two reporters finding out and looking into that story. And it followed sort of what, you know, the facts they got and the stage that they got to. Then the FBI and the justice people, whoever, then went on and figured out the whole cover-up of what was behind it. I think if Pakula tried to tackle the whole Watergate scandal, then it would have been just super messy, and just you would need a 10-part series to do that. I think this was just focusing on the reporters and what, because it's based on a true book, their story on them uncovering the sort of initial stages of the investigation. Because there was a massive cover up, so they were just focusing on the break in and what happened with the break in and tracing the break in back to the committee to re-elect Nixon. So I think it did that great.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, as a journalist myself, I did love watching that, putting the story together and going out and finding facts and interviewing people and calling sources and connecting the dots and like doing research and finding out, okay, well, how does this person connect to that person, you know? And like, I did get a bit of like glee watching that. I'm like, this is what like every journalist should do. Like, I don't report on that kind of stuff, but I would love to one day, you know, report on that, you know, do this like deep investigative journalism that has like, you know, real world, you know, impacts for, you know, people. Because that was obviously huge, you know, in terms of the history of journalism, you know, that was, you know, that's one of the most key events ever. And so certainly I think it was a good representation of what journalists should be, which is, you know, rigorous and persistent and factual and, you know, striving for excellence in the course of uncovering the truth. And I think, you know, there's a reason why Woodward and Bernstein are still in demand today. You know, they're still getting interviewed, they're still being asked to speak at different events, you know, they're still being profiled. You know, they're still having books written about them, they're still writing books themselves.
The thing is, I when you say about the backstory, I personally understood what was happening from the get-go, because it was so tightly directed and explained that I knew what was happening. I knew of the Watergate scandal, and it very clearly starts from the break-in at the Democratic headquarters or whatever. I think it's pretty well explained that you can do in a 2-hour film. I wasn't confused at any point. I wasn't thinking, oh, what's happening? Like, the dialogue that I think Pakula, basically, he directs it in a way that if you put your phone away or look on Instagram for 1 second, you're going to be confused, because you need to be paying attention to the dialogue and what's happening. So I think you reap the benefits from it if you remain engaged. I'm not saying you didn't. I don't know what you were doing during the film, but personally, I glued myself to the screen, and it was all very clear. So I didn't get that aspect of not understanding, but maybe, I don't know, we differed there.
I said I got the story. I wasn't particularly interested in it, which surprised me, because, you know, I'm obviously a journalist myself. I'm interested in American politics. I think what I know of the Watergate scandal seems interesting. But yeah, for me, I was just personally confused. I couldn't get what was, like, what the story was that they were trying to tell. Like, I said, I got these people broke into the headquarters. They somehow had something to do with a committee to re-elect a president. But I'm like, I can't connect the dots.
The reporters connect the dots for you.
But see, I didn't feel like they did.
Hoffman and Rhett, well, they did because they uncovered the story. So you watch them uncovering the story.
Yeah, but that's my question. What was the story?
The story was the five people who broke in were supposedly paid by the, well, I can't remember what the title was, the second most important guy below Nixon, to break in and supposedly steal, I don't know, secrets or to sort of shade whoever was, to throw shade on whoever was the Democratic, you know, person who was going to be. And they uncovered, or they further uncovered, that there was a huge campaign over the course of several years to discredit the Democrats to allow Nixon to be re-elected. And this was in the FBI, in the CIA, in the Justice Department. It was everywhere. And I found that to be explained perfectly well. I followed it.
Maybe I'm just dumb. So,
I don't know. No. I'm not calling you dumb.
No, I know. I'm calling myself dumb.
I don't know. I can't. I followed it well. And of course, there's some political mumbo jumbo that I was a bit like, huh? But other than that, you know, I followed it. I read a lot of reviews on Letterboxd, and a lot were saying that, you know, they appreciated how sort of straightforward in its approach it was, and it stuck to the truth. There was no fictional fluff, fictional plot lines. You know, the Watergate scandal is dramatic sort of in itself. And there were always, I saw a guy mention, there were always two questions throughout the film, which was, will they break the story? So, you know, will they get the guy that they want to? And will they get hurt in the process? And those two questions were always through the film. So for me, there was great tension in there. They were always, you know, at work right up until the end. And yeah, I just loved the sort of slow burn, you know, the two journalists going to question these people, you know, bit by bit. They might get thrown a bone here and there, they get stopped, they get another bone thrown at them, and I ended up really rooting for them and wanting them to break the story. And you know, some people may say, oh, it's just people talking on phones, writing things down, you know, there's no car chases, no gunfights, no, you know, explicit physical jeopardy. But I think that was gripping even though there was none of those things. It's a testament to how well it's made.
What did you think of the two lead actors?
I'm surprised they weren't Oscar nominated, because there were nominations for Jason Robards, who I think won. He was their boss, basically.
Oh yes, the famous Ben Bradley.
Yes, and Jane Alexander was nominated as Judy Miller. You know, the girl that Hoffman visits in her house and tries to get her to speak.
Oh, she was nominated?
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was really good.
I can't believe her or Jason Robards were nominated. I didn't really.
Really?
I thought they were really good. I wasn't. I wasn't keen on really anybody in this film. But I mean, if anyone was going to be nominated, I would have said, you know, like you said, Hoffman and Redford, not some random supporting people.
I thought everyone in this film was great. Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. I read that they both visited the Post offices for like 2 months and really soaked in the sort of reporter's atmosphere and stuff. Redford in particular, you could tell the more he visited with the aptly named Deep Throat. Yes, there's a character called Deep Throat. He got, like, Redford got more desperate and sort of more paranoid as the story went on. And I thought that was portrayed really well alongside the overall sort of tension and paranoia as the story goes on. Because you think, oh, are they going to get caught? Is the FBI going to get to them? You know? Yeah, so yeah, I thought everyone was great. I can't really see how you have an issue with.
I don't know. They just didn't really stand out to me. I didn't really think Hoffman or Redford were good. I wasn't really impressed by their performances. I mean, I've seen them in other films. I thought they were good, like Dustin Hoffman. I hated The Graduate, but I do think he was good in. I do think he was good in Rain Man. I thought that was a great film. I mean, so was Tom Cruise, but I thought Dustin Hoffman was great in that. I thought he was great in Wag the Dog, which again, so was Robert De Niro. I thought, and this is like a personal favorite of mine, it doesn't have very good ratings on Letterboxd, but I don't care. I love it. A film called Boy Choir. I thought he was good in that. And then Robert Redford, I haven't seen many films he's in. I think this was only the fourth film of his that I've seen. I think of the films I have seen him in, I thought, oh, yeah, he's all right. I don't dislike him as an actor, but yeah, just neither of their performances I thought were anything impressive to me.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know. I thought they captured the essence of being, you know, hardcore journalists out to get the story really, really well. I thought they were good together. Their dynamic was good together. It didn't really call for any great dramatic acting chops, which it didn't need, because it wasn't that type of film. So I think they had to be sort of low-key in a way. But I thought they were both great. But yeah.
One of the interesting things I got from this film, which has always existed long before Watergate and still exists today and will exist until the human race dies, is there's just so many unethical, immoral people. You know, there were so many people involved in this scandal, and they just refused to tell the truth. You know, like, you know, Woodward and Bernstein would go to them, and they just, like, slam the door on their face. Oh, I'm not going to talk about that. I can't, you know. It's like, don't you have a conscience? Like, how can you... I've always said to myself, if I wasn't a journalist, I'd be a sociologist or something, because I'm fascinated by humans and why we are the way we are and why we do what we do and why do we behave in the ways that we do. And I just don't understand people who just don't have a conscience. They just go through life knowing they're doing things that are illegal, knowing they're doing things that are immoral, and they don't care. They just think, oh, I'm getting paid well, or I just, you know, it's whatever, it's just a job, I don't care. I don't understand how people can go through life like that, but clearly this just showed, and this only showed a handful of them. I mean, there were, you know, God knows how many people involved in Watergate, you know, how people can, you know, be involved in something like that and sleep at night. I don't personally get it.
Of course you're right. I think there's a side to it where some people were afraid for their lives or livelihoods, or
yes, yeah, which is understandable. Yeah,
as Jay Miller's character shows, you know, she was terrified of what would happen to her. You know, says, oh, you know, there are people watching, you have to come inside, like, you know. So there are people who willingly did it and were probably happy to do it, but there are people who were sort of pressured from bosses or whoever, you know. If we go into the whole Watergate scandal, we'll be here for hours, but
See, now we've talked about it, I feel like I could bump it up. I feel like one star was harsh now, but I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me.
I want to talk about the direction, because I feel like Pakula, he kind of like, he forces you to watch what's going on and to take it in detail. And like I said, if you slip, then you're not going to pay attention. That's that. But he understands that if you want to tell a story as intricate as this, you have to make sure the audience will listen. So he allows for a lot of dialogue and always documents what's going on, which adds to the sense of realism. So I can see why some people may think, oh, that's a bit boring. But I just loved it. And the whole writing team and Pakula almost made it seem like a detective story too. So it was like mixing the fact with political intrigue. There's always a feeling of like momentum. So there's always a feeling of reporters wanting to chase the next thing, you know, being, I think I mentioned it, but being shut down, having to go again, and it makes you yourself want to find out what's this whole powerful network. The ending was very abrupt, but I think it did the job well. You know, it's basically, there's just a typewriter, and it explains that all these people got indicted and sent to prison, and then Nixon eventually, you know, resigned from office, because you need a whole miniseries to explain all that. But it was basically the reporters, they did their job. They connected the five men to the committee to re-elect Nixon, and then the scandal erupted. And I also want to say, I love the production design, like the sort of 70s gritty feel. I always like that. The camera work was great, the lighting, the scenes in the garage with Redford and Deep Throat, they were just so like brilliantly lit. I just loved them. The sort of offices, the cramped apartments, the sort of notes everywhere, the phones. I don't know. I just really like the whole aesthetic.
Maybe you've convinced me. Maybe I'm going to bump it up a star to 2.5 to 2 stars. I feel like I've been unnecessarily harsh now.
I don't know, because I was scrolling through the reviews and almost, I know you shouldn't base your thoughts on what people think, and I don't.
I never do. I totally disregard.
I know. But there were so many well-written reviews on this, and I was like, I was I liked sort of 25 reviews or something, because everyone just shared my thoughts, and I know you shouldn't change your opinion based on that, but they had so many great thoughts on it, and I agreed with all of them. And a lot of people seem to love this film.
I will admit too, in that sense, I'm guilty of confirmation bias. So if I don't like a film, I'm not clicking on the 5-star reviews. Like, if I give a film 1/2-star, I go straight to the 1/2-star reviews to see if I can find people who agree with me. I don't, which I know is bad. I probably should look through all the reviews and be like, I should look at the other side and be like, okay, I didn't like this film. I'm going to see why people do like it. But I am who I am. And so I seek out, and I'm like, no, I hated it. So I want to find people who hated it too.
I know. I read one of the 1-star reviews because I'm curious. And a lot of them were either written in different languages so I couldn't understand, or they were like, oh, this is boring. And I was like, okay, yes, but you know, you can't just, you've got to take into account some other things than you were bored. There weren't any 1-star reviews that I read and I was like, okay, I get you, I understand.
Yes, no, I was the same. I did look for them, and I similarly, it was the same with you. They were all in other languages, or they were just like, this is boring. And I'm like, true, it was boring, but you need to give me a bit more than that. So
I was riveted. I was stuck to the screen. But I can see, if you're not into politics or journalism, it's just some men talking. But to me, it was so much more than that. I'm not one to normally go for those sort of like paranoia 70s thrillers, like, but when I get to them, I really like them. And I think it's one of the best procedural dramas ever made. I do. I hope I've convinced you a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like I might change my rating because of you. So you've done your job.
Good. Okay. I don't know if I could do the same with Locke.
Yeah, we'll see. So let's move on to your pick.
Yeah, so this is Come On, Come On, 2021, so very recent for once, which is a change for me.
You're picking a recent film. What's happening?
I don't know. Yeah, since this is, my mind's going crazy.
Yeah, I picked the 70s film and you picked the 2021
yeah,
film.
Yeah, exactly. So it's directed by Mike Mills, who I'm not that aware of. I haven't seen any of his other work.
I knew the name. Some of the other films he has on Letterboxd are all very highly rated. So like 20th Century Woman is sitting at a 4.0 average. Beginners is sitting at a 3.9 average, which I read, don't quote me on this, but I did read that it won Christopher Plummer an Academy Award. I Am Easy to Find... I know that's some short film actually, so ignore that. But that's sitting at 4.1. And then Come On, Come On is sitting at 4.1. So he's only released a few films, but they're all very, by Letterboxd standards, they're all very highly acclaimed.
So I guess I can give a synopsis. So the story follows a man called Johnny, played by Joaquin Phoenix. He's a radio host, and his job is to basically go around interviewing children about the sort of state of the world and the future and so on. And Johnny phones his sister one day, who he hasn't spoken to in a year. We find out since their mum died from, I think it was dementia.
Yeah. Well, I think I read in some of you it was like a brain tumor, but she had dementia. Yeah.
Yeah. And a sister called Viv asked Johnny over the phone if he can come to LA and look after her 9-year-old son, Jesse, who's played by a Brit called Woody Norman. And she has to go and help her ex-husband, the father, who is having mental problems. So Johnny agrees, goes to LA, and then the film sort of begins from there as they, so Johnny has to look after Woody. He takes him to New York, in New Orleans, to do his job with him, and their bond sort of grows day by day, and then he returns him at the end, pretty much. Yeah, that's a very quick synopsis, but yeah. Shall I go, or do you want to tell me what you thought?
Up to you. How about you go first, since you weren't the biggest fan of it?
Yeah, well, I gave it 2.5.
So average.
So yeah, 5 out of 10. I don't know. I just found myself quite sort of disconnected from it. I'll go with the good first. I thought the performances were pretty good. Phoenix was really good, as usual. He's a great actor, so I thought he stood out. I found the child kind of annoying, but he put in a decent performance for a child, so yeah. The cinematography was great. I always like seeing black and white in modern films. I think it can sometimes be quite pretentious if it's done in modern times, but I think it works here. I like some of the music. Some of the music was good. That's pretty much it for the good. But then again, with the bad, I don't have a lot to say, because like, I don't think it's a bad film. Like, objectively, it's good, I think. But it just wasn't my thing. Like, it dragged a lot. I found myself checking my phone a fair bit, which I don't normally do during films. So that's a bit of a red flag when I do check my phone. I just didn't really connect with the relationship between Johnny and Jesse as much as other people did. Like, it was sweet watching their relationship grow, but by the end, I just didn't really feel much emotion for what was happening. Like, I didn't choke up at all with the final scene. I was just like, okay, like, fine. It's a sweet relationship. Okay. I just wasn't really invested in the characters enough to truly care. I was more interested in the relationship between Johnny and Viv, his sister, but that didn't really go beyond the surface level. They didn't really explore that a ton. But yeah, like, it was nice and well-meaning, but there weren't many highlights for me to sort of remember and enjoy. And I'm sure there are deep meanings and messages, sort of strong family ties, keeping up connection with loved ones. I think the interviews, basically, there are scenes where Phoenix is interviewing kids, and I think it looks like it was done almost real life, but I'm not sure.
I thought that too. I was like, are these like not actors and just real kids? Yeah, I did mean to look it up. I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were just real kids, because that's what it seemed like.
It sounded like the message was sort of, don't let adults fuck up the world. Kids are kids, know more than adults, etc. About climate change, current world issues, blah blah blah. Yeah, so that's sort of, I don't know. It was okay, but I found it kind of dull. Didn't really connect with it on an emotional level. So although I know it's not a terrible film, it's not a bad film, I just wasn't that interested. So yeah, what did you think?
I gave Come On, Come On 4 stars.
Ah, okay. I was expecting maybe 2 or something.
I'm playing against type here.
But I'm glad, you know, it's good that you liked it.
And it's funny, you know, you just said, you know, you listed off for good, and a lot of what you said was good, I would agree with. And then you said, you know, you got to the bad, and you're like, oh, I can't, you know, it's sort of hard to explain. And it's sort of that, for me, the opposite. It's sort of hard to explain why I think it's good. But I just connected with it. You know, you said you didn't. I just connected with it. Like, and not that I've experienced any of what happens in a film. It you know, I was thinking about it, and my comparison... and it's funny because I know you didn't really connect with this film either. My comparison would be something like Boyhood, in a sense.
I did get slight Boyhood vibes. But this is a better... I like it more than Boyhood, but yeah.
Yeah, whereas I think Boyhood is perfect. But yeah. That's different. You know, Boyhood obviously is focusing more on the boy, right? It's focusing more on Mason and Boyhood, and the mother and the father and the sister are just... in his orbit as such, but it's about Mason. Whereas this, I would say, is about Jesse, the child, as much as it is about Johnny, the adult. The only way I can describe it is it's just a beautiful film. I only finished watching it about an hour ago. Even during it, but I got to the end of it, and I was like, that was a beautiful film, and I can't really explain.
I wish I had that feeling. Normally...
No, but, you know, like, we all respond to things differently. I mean, there's plenty of films, you know, you think are beautiful in a sense, and I think, oh, that's shit, you know. Like,
yeah. But the frustrating thing is, I can see, you know, I can clearly see why people connected with it. So maybe it was the mood I was in, or I don't know, because I don't think it's a bad film. I just didn't really fully, but yeah, sorry. Yeah. Carry on.
Yes, I just got to the end and I was like, that was just a beautiful film, just in terms of, I think the cinematography was just incredible. I mean, the black and white was so, it just looked beautiful. And I was like, that was the perfect choice for that film. And I'm such a fan of like black and white. Like, when it doesn't need to be black and white, but it really works. Like, Paper Moon, obviously. I mean, I know that's different because that's set in the Depression and stuff. But I think that obviously, as we said on our last episode, the black and white helped that. I think something like The Lighthouse, which I also gave 4 stars to, I think the black and white helped that so much. Visually, it was fantastic. I think the music was great. all the characters, and again, this is similar to Boyhood in a sense, all the characters in Boyhood, as I said on our episode when we discussed it, they felt so real. And I got that here again. All the characters felt so real. Like, you know, I didn't even feel like I was watching acting. And I think that was obviously helped by A, the writing, and then B, the performances. I mean, of the films I've seen Phoenix in, I'm not going to attempt to say his first name because I can't, Joaquin, however you say it. I always want to say Joaquin. Can we not just pronounce it how it looks? Just Joaquin. See, River was easy to pronounce. We just, you know, she's just been like his brother, so.
Yeah, yeah. Why couldn't his parents have named him, like, I don't know, Adam or, like, James or
George.
Yeah.
George Phoenix.
George Phoenix, yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of stuff he's in. I know he's held up there very highly. I've seen Joker, obviously, which I thought was great, but that's a very different film. I've not really seen any of the other stuff he's in. Certainly not of the things where he's sort of held up there as
Gladiator. Have you seen Gladiator?
I have seen Gladiator, but that's Russell Crowe's movie. That's not his movie.
Yeah, but he's excellent in it. He's excellent. In my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that movie. That is a great movie, but I think of Gladiator. I think of Russell Crowe. I don't even think of Phoenix. Fair. So like that's her, fair. I want to see. It's on my watch list, which I've heard he's fantastic in. The Master, I want to see. I've heard he's fantastic. You Were Never Really Here, I want to see. I've heard he's fantastic. You know, there's different films he's in, which I know he's very much acclaimed. In Walk the Line, again, I want to say I've heard he's fantastic. So I definitely need to check out more of his stuff. But he was incredible in this. And I thought the child actor of Woody Norman, which is a very strange first name for a boy who is, however old he is, 9, 10 years old.
Probably comes from quite a smart, like, upper-class English family, which is probably...
Yeah, or maybe they're just big fans of Woody Allen.
Yeah.
I thought he was great. I mean, because I like child actors. I mean, I know Christian doesn't generally, but, you know, I fucking love child actors. Like, it's, you know, some of them are just so talented. And I look at this and I'm like, he's so talented.
He is talented. There were moments where I found him kind of insufferable, but maybe that was the point, because obviously the bond was...
Yes, that was definitely the point. I mean, he was certainly insufferable, and there were certainly times I'm thinking, oh my God.
He was meant to be, like, weird, right? He was meant to be a
exactly.
Bit
he was meant to be this so weird, eccentric, odd child, very pretentious, or not pretentious, sorry. He probably is pretentious. very precocious, I meant to say. You know, so yeah, he certainly was infuriating at times, but I think that was the way the character was written. I look at the story and I read quite a lot of analysis on this in a brief time between when I finished watching it and when we started to record. There's, you know, a few different interpretations of it. I actually read an interview that Mike Mills, the director, did. The magazine, they said to him, like, you know, what was the starting point for this film and this story? And he said, well, it's just, you know, my child. And, like, the things you go through becoming a parent. Different reviews talked about, this is reviews on other sites, I didn't actually read any Letterboxd reviews. You know, they talked about different meanings. So one of them said, you know, it's about the way we absorb and experience the world around us at all ages in life. Others said it was a tribute to the vast and vital power of memory, the community provided by family ties, the essential nature of the cinema in gathering and transmitting the stuff of life. You know, I've said it was obviously inspired by children and sort of, you know, how we are as children and then how the world sort of shapes us into what we become as adults. And maybe we lose that innocence and that curiosity and that sense of fun or adventure or enjoyment. I'm still sort of thinking about the messages and the meanings, but part of me is also like, I don't know if it needs one.
That is different for you, because normally you seek out a meaning, don't you?
I did. But didn't I say in our last episode, what film were we discussing? Paper Moon, actually. It was Paper Moon. This is actually comparable in a sense, because it's a black and white film about a road drama, sort of, you know, so there's similarities. I don't know if Mike Mills is inspired by Paper Moon or, but I did think when I was watching, oh, this is sort of like, I do think Paper Moon is a better film, but I did think during the course of watching, but oh, maybe it's sort of like Paper Moon. But yeah, Paper Moon is a film where I don't really need a meaning because I'm so engrossed in the story. Boyhood is a film where I don't think Boyhood has meaning, but I it's a film I don't really need meaning because or any deep meaning because I'm so engrossed in the story. This is the same. I think this probably impressed me more visually. Certainly, I liked the story. And from what I've read of all the different analyses, I can see what Mike Mills was getting at. And I agree with it. And I think it's interesting. And I think it's insightful. And I think it makes you think about the world. And I need to think about it some more to sort of process it. But yeah, this, it surprised me because I didn't expect to like it. Not that I always try and go into films with an open mind. Even if it's a film, I think, oh, I'm not going to. I try and go into it and think, okay, I'll remain neutral. I'll, you know.
Yeah, I too thought it wasn't your sort of thing, but yeah.
Yes, exactly. But it surprised me. It surprised me I didn't like my pick. It surprised me I did like your pick. And yeah, it's just, I have to commend you. Very good pick. I knew of the film. It wasn't on my watch list, but I knew of it, and I knew how highly it was acclaimed. So I'm actually glad that I, because I probably wouldn't have sorted it out, honestly, but I'm very glad we watched it, because it's a film that's, it just stuck with me. You know, I'm still thinking about it. Like, All the President's Men, I wasn't thinking about it. I turned off and thought, okay, whatever. Like, I'm still, I said, I finished this film over an hour ago. I'm still thinking about it. I'm still processing it. I'm still contemplating it. And I think that, you know, when a film has that sort of impact, it's special.
The only reason I picked it is, it's been on my watch list for ages. And it keeps on popping up among, like, Letterboxd reviewers. I know it got a lot of awards buzz, but it didn't actually get many sort of awards, I don't think, from the major sort of, I don't think it got any Oscar nominations, which people were pissed about. So I was sort of intrigued by it that way. So yeah, I'm glad I've seen it. I'm glad I picked it. So
see,
yeah.
Can I just say, Joaquin Phoenix never would have slapped someone on stage. Just saying.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, that's true. He would have walked up there gracefully, although he probably would have done some sort of climate change annoying speech. But still, that's better than hitting someone on stage.
He does seem like, from what I've seen, I'm not really seeing that much of him, but, and I know he is because he was raised in a very, like, I don't want to sound disparaging, but a very, like, hippie-like environment. You know, his parents were very alternative.
Yeah, he kind of, personally, he irritates me a bit, but as an actor, he's great, so.
Yeah, and I was going to say, from what I've seen of him, he seems like a very nice, genuine, down-to-earth person. He seems like a very kind, normal guy. I definitely want to check out more of his stuff, and this was...
Yeah, you should, yeah.
I'm very glad that I've seen this, and that this has inspired me to watch more of his work. Let's move on to our final film, which is Christian's pick. So this is Locke, L-O-C-K-E, from 2013, directed by Stephen Knight. It stars Tom Hardy. And that's it.
Well, voice cast too, but Tom Hardy.
Yes, we do hear people on the telephone, but we do not see anybody apart from Tom Hardy. So it is, for all intents and purposes, a one-man show. So the plot is Tom Hardy plays a man called Ivan Locke, who is a construction foreman, and he is working on this big concrete pour for these buildings that are going up. They're the largest non-nuclear facility, non-military concrete pour in European history. So the film takes place the night before that's going to happen. It's going to happen the next morning. The whole film takes place in his car, and it's just him on the phone to a large variety of people. So he's going to... London, I think it is, to be with this woman who's having a baby, his baby, who he had a one-night stand with. The film follows him talking to her, trying to reassure her. She's very, you know, upset and worried. She's by herself, and then there's complications with the baby, so he's trying to sort of reassure her and tell her, okay, I'm going to be there for the birth. He's talking to construction people he works with. You know, he calls one of the guys that works with him and says, look, you know, I'm going, you know, to London. I'm not going to be there tomorrow. You need to sort of take charge of this. He talks to, I guess, the person who is his boss, who ends up firing him because it's such a big job and he's sort of being derelict in his duties. And you know, he's told by the bigwigs in America, get rid of this guy. He talks with his wife, who he admits the affair to, and she, you know, over the phone, you know, kicks him out and says he can't come home, this isn't your home, I can't believe you cheated on me. He talks to his sons, who he doesn't tell anything to in terms of the affair. They talk about, you know, this football match that's on that he was supposed to come home for and watch with them. I think that covers everyone he talks to. He talks to other people at the hospital, the people from the hospital calling him and saying, oh, you know.
Some council person.
Yeah, he's talking to people about the job and he's talking to police and council about the job tomorrow. But yeah, the main people he's talking to are like his the people he works with, his wife and children, and then the mistress, which not even a mistress, because it was a one-night stand, but, you know, the person who's having his child. I gave this film half a star.
let me just preface. If I could have bet everything I own on Jason giving us half star, I would have. If I could have bet my whole Blu-ray collection on Jason giving us half star,
that's a big bet.
I would have done. I was pretty. I kind of felt sorry for Christian because as soon as he picked it, I was like, shit. Okay, so you explained.
See, I've gone against type for the other two films, so I had to stay true to form for the final one.
We had a half star discussion for a couple good episodes.
I know it's been quite a while because I was on a really generous run for like a few weeks. I was just giving out 4 stars, 4.5 stars, 5 stars. I think the last half star I gave before this was Everything Everywhere All at Once, which. We won't get into, and then I had like literally 3 weeks or 3+ weeks of giving everything 4 or more stars, and then this sort of broke the streak.
So do you want to go first?
Yeah, look, so you know, this is obviously an interesting film in the way it's filmed. Because it is just one person for majority, for all of the film, and obviously everyone else is just there by voice. The only other film that I've seen like this, and I wasn't the biggest fan of this film, but I saw it a long time ago, so I can't really remember, so I need to actually rewatch it, was Buried from 2010, which stars Ryan Reynolds. And that's a similar thing where it's only him on the screen the whole time. There's other people from voice. You know, we hear by voice, but he's the only person on film. So I wasn't a big fan of that film, but again, I probably watched it sort of around the time it came out, which was, 12 years ago now? So what was I, 16? So, you know, I probably need to go back and rewatch it as an adult, as someone who's actually into film now. So look, I thought the concept was interesting, and I'd heard of a film before because of a concept. And it wasn't on my watch list, but I was intrigued to watch it because I thought, okay, well, this is going to be interesting. You're asking one actor to carry the whole film, which is a big ask. There was a lot going on in the sense of, well, he had this secret love child and then his marriage was broken down and then he got fired. But I was just bored and I found a lot of it predictable. Like, as soon as he said, oh, I've got this love child, then I knew. I was like, okay, cool, your wife's going to leave you. You know, you've abandoned your duties from this biggest job of the century. You're going to get fired. I just, there was nothing in it that surprised me. And thus, there was nothing in it that excited me. I was watching it and I'm like, cool, I know it's going to happen. Like 15 minutes in, I'm like, cool, I see where it's going. And I feel like the film was made more for like this concept. The way I would criticize this film, and I hate to keep bringing up Boyhood, but I guess it's similar to your problems with Boyhood, in that you felt like, and I don't want to speak for you, but from what I remember of our discussion on that episode, you said that you felt the film was held in high acclaim more for the way it was made of being filmed over 12 years than the story. Am I correct in that summation? I would say the same for this film. I would say I feel like it's held in higher regard because, oh, it's one person on screen the whole time and that's it, than the story. Because to me, the story was not interesting. I mean, there's plenty of films that ever deal with people who have love children and they have to tell the wife, you know, like, I know maybe they don't lose their job in the course of that, but I'm like, cool, this isn't an interesting story to me. Like, I've seen probably 50 films that deal with this story. The film relied more on its gimmick of like, oh, it's one guy in a car, than the story. The story didn't really grab me. You know, the other thing I would say, the character of Ivan Locke, and maybe he was designed to be this, maybe you can tell me, or, you know, what your thoughts on that, he just annoyed the shit out of me. You know, first of all, his accent was annoying. I don't know what that accent was supposed to be, but that...
Welsh. Well, it was Welsh.
Bloody, I don't want to watch any more films with Welsh people in them, because that was just annoying.
Oh, no, I love... Well, it's okay, but bear in mind, Tom Hardy isn't Welsh. I love the Welsh accent.
Isn't Christian Bale Welsh?
He's cut, yes, but he speaks with an English accent, mostly.
Okay.
It was meant to be a Welsh accent.
So maybe she just got Christian Bale in this film. Like, fuck, I love Christian Bale. Yeah, it was just annoying.
If any Welsh people are listening, then they're going to be annoyed, probably. But yeah, turn your ears off.
Sorry, and I do like Wales. I've been to Wales. It's a very nice country. I just don't like Tom Hardy's accent in this. But anyway, that's just superficial. But that did really grind on my gears for the whole film. But no, he was just this thoroughly unlikable character. Like, the most emotion he showed was when, like, he realized that the job was going to be fucked up. Like, he didn't care about, oh, this woman who I impregnated is having this baby by herself, and then there's complications with the baby because the umbilical cord is wrapped around his neck. He couldn't care less about her, in my opinion.
He didn't love her at all. That's the point. He doesn't care about her. He cares about the baby, which he's trying to get to the hospital for. So he says over the phone to her, she says, "Do you love me?" And he says, "Well, don't ask me that. That's a stupid question." So he's not meant to care. So he's not showing any emotion when she's in danger, really, because he doesn't give a shit. It was a one night stand. Yeah, I'll get into more his responsibilities and what he thinks they are later. But yeah.
But like, even like towards his wife, like he tells his, like, you know, you can imagine you married someone, you had two kids, you know, like, I mean, the kids sounded teenagers maybe. So let's say they'd be married 15. Actually, no, it was 15 years. So I remember he said in the thing, I haven't done anything like this in 15, you know, in the whole 15 years. So they're married 15 years, say. They've probably known each other for longer. You can imagine what an impact this would have on somebody hearing that news. But not only have they cheated on you, but, oh, by the way, there's a kid being born tonight, which is mine. He said to his wife, "Oh, you know, I just want to take a practical step forward. Like, this is your wife. What are you a fucking robot? Like, can you, like, I he showed to me the character, and said, maybe it was supposed to be this way, I don't know, but he showed like no ounce of emotion to anyone. But it said the only time he cared about anything was the job. And it was like, you know, he constantly said, "Oh, well, I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm going to be there for the birth." But it's like, he doesn't, I don't think he even believes that. He's doing it because of his own history with his father or whatever. But he's not, like, I don't think he particularly wants to be there at the birth. I don't think he even wanted to really tell his wife. I think he's just doing it out of, his actions are not driven out of a sense of guilt and a sense of conscience, and a sense of, "I'm trying to do the right thing." He says his actions are driven out of a sense of some weird thing he has towards his father, and sort of like spite towards his father, and that's what it's driven out of. It's not driven out of, "I fucked up, I'm going to do the right thing." It's driven out of, "I'm going to show my dead father that I'm not him." And I'm like, that's not really the right way to look at the world. But
the thing is, I think that, but that's you. I don't think like that either. But the point is,
no. What I think is always right, don't you know?
Yeah, well, His the whole, there's a lot of moral ambiguity, because that's like, I think some of the point is that some, like, he isn't a good guy. Like, he is a bit of a dick, and he's just driven by his desire to show that he's better than his dad was. That's why he wants to be there for the birth of the baby. And you're probably right with his wife. His wife even says to him, basically, like, "You care more about this bloody concrete dump than you do about me." So I think part of the point is that, yes, he is an asshole, and he's just being driven by, you know, he doesn't love Beth. He doesn't care about her, really. It's just an impulsive decision to leave for the hospital because of the history. You know, you see him talking in his head to his dad, basically saying, "You weren't there for me, so I'm going to be there for this child." So I think he does care about the child in a sort of a twisted way, but he's more interested in living up to you know, what he thought his dad should have been for him.
Yeah, but like, that's the thing. I think, let's say if a film played on, right, let's say if there was a sequel 5 years after or something, right, I think his, what's the word, like his commitment to the child would extend as far as, in my opinion, oh, well, I was there for the birth.
I don't think so. I don't think
because,
so.
Because, I mean, like, but like you say, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. I said, all he cares about is his concrete getting poured. He doesn't care about anything else, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I think in a twisted sort of way, along with the whole dad's trauma stuff, I think he does genuinely want to be there for this child, because that's the reason he changed his mind, didn't go home, didn't go home and tell his wife. He went to the hospital because, yes, he doesn't care about his Bethan, and he clearly... I think he does care about his wife. He's just maybe not the best at sort of showing it, because you can see he is clearly upset when she tells him, don't come home. Do you expect him in the car to shout, like, going, wow, 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 like shouting and screaming in the car?
I mean, like, I think... I felt like I was watching a robot. I expected some emotion, and I felt like I got no emotion. I mean, if that was me, and I wouldn't do this in the first place, but if I had cheated on my wife and had an extramarital, child born out of an extramarital affair, and I had to tell my wife, presumably I would love my wife, so it would be a very difficult decision, a very difficult statement to tell my wife and subsequently my children that I betrayed you. And, you know, was he just like, oh, we need to figure out a practical step forward? I'm like, do you have a heart? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
But that's the context of the character, though. That's the context of the character. That's what, you know, if you start to think, oh, I would have done that, then you need to think what the character does. So I don't think he was being robotic. I just think he is maybe, yeah, he's a bit of a twat. He shouldn't be doing it over the phone. He's a bit of a twat to the worker as well at the concrete dump. So he's just, I think there was emotion kind of hidden more. Like he is clearly, and about his sons, he's crying when he's talking to his sons. So he clearly, you saw him cry.
Very, very lightly, maybe a single solitary tear.
Yeah, but he is clearly... He is clearly emotional when he's talking to his son, because he knows deep down he's ruined their lives, most likely, and his wife's, just because he has this selfish desire to be better than his dad, which I think that dynamic is really interesting. So I personally don't think he was robotic. I mean, Tom Hardy, I thought, gave a great performance. Not anything sort of mind-blowing, but I thought he was really good. I mean, I gave it 3 stars, just so you know. Yeah, I don't know. I thought that the conversations with his dad gave sort of quite important context to what he was doing. You know, if they went in there, then I probably would have been like, oh, this is, you know, not great. But I thought they gave really good context to what he was doing.
Yeah, I wasn't personally a fan of them. And I felt like the writing for them was a bit too on the nose. You know, it was a bit too much, like, plain stating it out for the audience. And I was like, yeah, it just, I mean, that whole thing of where he was talking to his father is, you know, the spirit of his father and the headlights, you know, behind it. It didn't do anything for me. I just thought it was all rather silly, to be honest. But
I disagree. I think it fit with the sort of themes and what it was trying to do well. I don't think it was silly. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, as I said, I didn't love it. You know, it didn't hold my attention for the full time. Like, I wasn't bored, but, you know, it wasn't exactly sort of riveting like other films can be. But I don't think it coasted by just on the sort of premise of the one man car thing at all, really. I don't think it was successful just because of that, in my opinion. But I think it has more substance to it. It's not going to have much of a lasting impact for me, but I think it's good. I wouldn't go to someone, oh, you must watch Lock, or I'm not going to rewatch it anytime soon. But I thought it was good.
And I guess for me, it was interesting that, and I know I made this point on another episode, and I can't think what film I was discussing. I can't work out whether the film was trying to make him sympathetic or not sympathetic, like, to the audience.
I think it's ambiguous. I think it's what you feel. The you know, who directed it? Stephen Knight. I don't think he was forcing you to make up your mind either way. You know, it's this man's life is basically crumbling in this one car journey, and you have to decide if he was right to do it, if he wasn't right to do it. I think it's sort of left ambiguous. I think the clear thing is that one affair, one night stand, can basically ruin your whole life.
Yeah, but of course, but it's his fault. I just don't get these films where they want us to, like, and I'm not saying this was doing this, but they want us to sort of side or sympathize in some sense with someone who's done something wrong. Like, I can't do that.
But I don't think that was the point. I don't think Stephen Knight wanted, I don't think he wanted the audience to sympathize with Locke. I don't think he did. He wasn't saying, you must feel sorry for him. I don't think he was.
I think in the sense of what you said, you see his life crumble, you know, in 2 hours. I mean, the film is in 2 hours. The film is only 85 minutes. It's quite a brisk film. But you see his life fall apart in the space of one car ride, right, in the space of however long it takes him to get from wherever his construction site he's left is to the hospital where this woman's giving birth. I just know myself, I don't like watching films where people do the wrong thing and the filmmaker does not explicitly condemn that behavior.
I don't know, but that's what I like about some films, because it leaves it morally ambiguous, kind of like.
But who is morally ambiguous? Who is morally ambiguous in this world?
Well, yes, but
like, you know, like don't people have morals? Like, I don't understand how someone can go through life being morally ambiguous. I don't understand that.
Well, yeah, but like, there's people do right things, people do wrong things. Like, I don't think a character should just be like, Stephen Knight was not saying you must be sympathetic to Ivan Locke. Like, he wasn't saying that.
No, I agree with that.
It was just
I agree.
His journey over the course of this car journey, and you're left to sort of think about it. And if you think he's a dick, then you have a right to think he's a dick. Some people may think, okay, he's been a dick and he's had an affair, blah, blah, blah. But now he's making a choice to go and look after the baby. So he's right in that sense. So he's doing some things wrong and some things right. So it's not like he's a total villain, and it's not like he's a total hero.
Whereas I guess I see the world differently.
If he hadn't gone to this woman who he had an affair with, and gone to see the baby, you would have seen him as a twat, right? And he's a twat for going to see the baby and the mother and leaving his wife. So what should he have done?
He shouldn't have done it in the first place. That's my point.
Yes, but people...
this is my thing.
I know, but people do. That's the way of the world. People have affairs all the time.
People, I agree, yeah. But they should be condemned is my point. My because this is the thing. I think what he was trying to do with the film was he was trying to, like you said, leave it open. I don't think he was saying one way or the other, but I think he was balancing it, right? He was saying, okay, so this side of the scale says he cheated on his wife, he's having this baby with this woman. This other side of the scale says he's doing the right thing and he's owned up to his wife, he's going to be there for when the baby's born, etc. Whereas the way I see the world, I'm like, this scale where he's doing the right thing by being there for the baby and telling his wife, I'm like, that's outweighed in a negative sense by the fact of he had this affair in the first place. And so it's like, I don't have any sympathy for him doing the right thing after the fact, because his crime, in quotes, has already been committed. It doesn't matter whether he's penitent afterwards. The crime is done.
Well, yeah, and his life has been ruined now, pretty much, because of that one
as
action.
It should
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we I think we're kind of agreeing.
No, we are, but I feel like the filmmaker, Ivan Locke, so many times throughout the film, said, oh, I've got to do this, I'm doing the right thing, And it's like he's trying to convince himself of that, obviously. And he's, and I felt like he was trying to also convince the audience. And I'm like, but no, you're not doing the right thing because you fucked up in the first place.
Yeah, but I think the majority of the audience members do think he's an idiot for doing what he did. I don't think, but I don't think that by the end, a lot of people will be like, oh, I feel sorry for Ivan. I think he's a great guy. He's gone. I don't think that.
I think the film, when it ended, wanted us to feel some sort of sympathy or pity for... I think pity is the best word, actually. I think the film wanted us to pity Ivan Locke and the fact that his life was destroyed in the space of 2 hours. And I refuse to pity someone who does the wrong thing. I refuse.
You see, I disagree entirely that he wanted us to pity him. I think it was just a character study where at the end you make up your. I don't think Stephen Knight and the scriptwriters, whoever, sat down and said, by the end of this film, we want the audience to feel pity for Ivan Locke. I doubt that happened. I think I don't think that was what the meaning of it. It will be interesting to, we should ask Christian what he thinks.
Yeah.
Because if Christian pitied him or felt sorry for him or something. Because I think it was left the audience to think what, you know, their own thoughts. And I think most of them think he's an idiot for even doing the affair in the first place. So, and knocking up this poor woman who's like 45. And is terrified. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll agree to disagree on the meaning of the film.
We'll agree to disagree. Yeah, I am genuinely curious to see what Christian thinks. Because
yeah, we should have asked him before. Well, I couldn't have asked him before because we didn't watch it. But yeah, we should have asked him like yesterday and been like, what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there we go.
I think that wraps up episode 28. Thanks everyone for tuning in. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you could give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and we will see you next week.